Hello and welcome to QSO. I'm Ted Randall and I invite you to stick with us for this radio program. Our guest today is John Amadeo, NN6JA. Now, who is John? John is the television producer for the TV syndication show starring Tim Allen, The Last Man Standing, that portrays the fictional character Mike Baxter, who plays the role of a licensed ham operator on this television show. Of course, they have a complete working ham station on the set. And I believe tomorrow they're going to be doing their special event station. So you'll want to be able to find out about that and be able to work that special event station and get you a QSL confirmation. So stay tuned to QSO. And now, ladies and gentlemen, John Amadeo, NN6JA. Our guest is John Amadeo, N6JA, and he is the producer of the television show Last Man Standing, and we're going to talk about ham radio today. So how is the world treating you, John?
Well, hey, Ted, the world's treating us great. We're entering our second season of Last Man Standing. Hopefully your viewers know that, and the show is moving to Friday nights on ABC at 8 p.m., and we will be followed by the new Reba McEntire show, Malibu Country. So together, we will form a very family-friendly comedy block on ABC.
Well, for those that are not familiar with Last Man Standing, and of course, we have folks all listening all over the world, so there may be some folks that may not be in an area where the show airs. Why don't you give a brief description as to what the show is?
Absolutely. Well, Last Man Standing, of course, stars Tim Allen, and most people I would hope would remember Tim from Home Improvement, who stars as Mike Baxter. And Mike Baxter is a family man, and he has a wife and three daughters. And he works at a place called Outdoor Man. Outdoor Man is a store that sells all kinds of sporting goods, sort of in the lines of a Bass Pro or a Cabela's. And Mike at Outdoor Man is a marketing manager, so he's the face of Outdoor Man. And he travels around the country and around the world to learn about new products, and to promote the brand of Outdoor Man. And among Mike's hobbies, Mike's a man's man, and he is a hunter and a camper and a fisher and all that, and he likes to rock climb. And among other things, he's a ham radio operator, which gave us a little license to play with ham radio, even at work here on the show.
Well, you know, that's kind of true to form today, because years ago, you would expect the outdoor type not to be in any way, shape, or form technical. But today, that's changed. In other words, you've got senior citizens that are totally computer savvy, you know, that are in their 70s and 80s. So today, technology has so engulfed us that this is a very accurate portrayal of what we can typically find today in society. And if you listen to ham radio, you'll hear guys on the air talking about their hunting trips, their fishing trips, and all the man things. Isn't that right, John?
Well, that's absolutely true. In fact, as we started to put the set together for the Mike Baxter office and the Outdoor Man set in general, we started thinking about, you know, what would those products be? And we, just like you would, we went online and looked at catalogs of other similar stores. And we were pretty surprised initially by the amount of technology that we've incorporated as a society into those outdoor activities. Used to be, if you wanted to go for a hike, all you really needed was a pair of hunting boots. But it seems now that you need a GPS and a fish finder and night vision scope and all of those things. So it really lended beautifully with the technological aspect of the show. And a man's man isn't necessarily someone who also can't pick up a radio or a technological device. Now, not to mention that Tim Allen himself is very much a lover of technology. So it made it pretty easy for us to factor those kinds of technological devices into our set dressing and props on the show.
So what do you think the chances are of us hooking him into getting a ham license?
You know, it's hard for me to speak directly for Tim, but I'll tell you my experience is that he's interested in ham radio. The idea of putting ham radio on the set came really initially from a conversation with Tim. Tim is an outdoor man in his own right, and he had mentioned to me early in the process that he was interested in radio communications. And, of course, my ears perked up, and I asked him, do you mean ham radio? And he said, yeah, ham radio. I, I, I'd like to have ham radio in my life. In fact, I know he had, before I ever met him, stopped into the local ham radio outlet to look at equipment. So there was definitely some interest there, and that really pushed me along to want to make a ham radio station for the Mike Baxter office. What I don't think anybody bargained for is that I have a long history with ham radio myself, so I made it all practical. So the station that you see on the show, if you tune into the Last Man Standing show, you'll see ham radio equipment in Mike Baxter's office. That all works, and that's all hooked up, including antennas on the roof of our stage. So, who knows what'll come out of that.
Well, I guess the other thing that folks may not understand, too, and if you see these things on television, you see actors on TV, and you see celebrities traveling across the country. And I can speak for one, as we had a little conversation before we went on the air about Ronnie Millsap, WB4KCG. You know, Ronnie practically lives on the road. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys, they just don't have the time to do a lot of things like you would think we would call the normal guy would. You know, the guy that works 8 hours at a location and comes home from work and he's out, you know. There's a whole lot goes into being, I guess I want to say it's a celebrity or being part of a television show, because they got a lot of other things going on. So I'm sure in Tim's life, it's a fight for time, just like it is anyone else, to try to get into the hobby.
Yeah, that couldn't be more right. I know, we established a Facebook page for the ham radio aspect of the Mike Baxter's world, the K0XTT, which is a fictitious call sign we created for Mike Baxter. And we get a lot of traffic about the show, and people really appreciate the fact that Mike is a ham, and they get to see the equipment and the station we created for him. But of course, we are frequently asked the question, when will Tim Allen get his ham radio license? And, you know, I think Tim would like one. I think it is exactly an issue of time. He's a very busy guy. I mean, he spends 5 days a week with us, two of those days being 12 hours long. But he also does stand-up comedy in Las Vegas. He also does the Campbell Soup commercials and the Chevy truck commercials, and he does movies for Disney. So not to mention, I should mention, you know, he's got a family. So, boy, really tight for time. We'd support him in every way we could when he's ready to do it. He'll certainly have no trouble getting tutoring if that's what he wants, or getting the materials, which, you know, he actually already has the study materials. And I'm sure I could put a VE session together pretty easily for Tim. A lot of volunteers standing by to do that. So when Tim's ready, we'll facilitate it, but it really has to be his decision, as you can imagine.
Oh, I was going to say, though, the time. Wouldn't it be great if we could figure out a way to open up our lives and add just a few more hours a day? You know, that, you know, just kind of sneak it in. If there was some sort of an interdimensional device you could use, you know, to mash a button and, oh, I can just add three more hours to this day. You know,
because I've written that memo many times. All that will take is extra money and a time machine.
Well, now I want to know about you. I want to know what got you started in the amateur radio hobby. What sparked your interest, and how did all that happen?
Oh, that's it's a big circle for me. It's interesting. I grew up on Long Island in a small town and had a good friend whose father was an editor at ABC in Manhattan and who was a ham radio operator. Introduced all of us kids to ham radio. Several of us got our technician's license back in the 1970s. Which actually made us Tech Pluses, because it was the same test as the general, except you didn't take the code. Moved through high school years and actually had a job at a small ham radio store for a while in New York, which is long out of business. It was called Harrison Radio at the time. Upgraded to general while in New York. I graduated a small film school in New York and moved to Los Angeles and got a job in television pretty quickly. And I have to say that I owe my ham radio technological background to that, because I didn't need to be taught much about technology. I could walk into audio editing, video editing. I could wire up my own, you know, video or sound rack. I could mix. I understood the basics of all the technologies, which really came from just playing with ham radio. So that was a great leg up for me in the industry. And then got hooked up with Carson Productions, Johnny Carson, and then, you know, sort of spiraled my way through various positions and wound up producing And now here I am in a position to build a ham radio station again, but finally on camera in a way that I guess we can share it with the rest of the world.
That's really quite incredible. Why don't you tell us just out of human interest a little bit about your experience working with Johnny Carson?
Oh, that was like a master's course in comedy. I really, in college, I remember watching Carson would be the last thing I would turn off and go to sleep and then wake up in the morning and go back to school. And when I landed in Los Angeles, it became pretty quickly apparent to me that I was going to need to work for a living and needed money. It wasn't going to last very long. And I managed to get a job with a small company installing video and audio equipment. And as I say, that information came to me right out of ham radio. One of our first clients was some of the people that worked at Carson Productions. I guess I impressed them because they asked me if I would join Johnny Carson Productions at a very low level, as a PA or a researcher. And I spent the first couple of months just basically photocopying things. And they had a show that actually was going to be made out of clips from The Tonight Show. It's called Carson's Comedy Classics. It's actually still on the air in a couple of places. And no one at the company really had a very clear idea of how that was going to be put together from an editorial standpoint. But, of course, I was in my 20s, and I knew everything at the time. So I outlined for them a way that the show could be formatted and edited pretty efficiently, and I guess they liked it because after a month or so of being a production assistant, they made me the supervising editor. And that was my first delving into network television. So I guess the short story is 25 years later, here I'm producing The Tim Allen Show.
Well, let me ask you this question. Did you said it was a course in comedy, or being able to learn? What, you know, tell me something. What was it, I guess I want to say, that got your attention as far as things you learned about the way comedy is done on television, as opposed to what you may have conceived watching it, you know, as a viewer?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think one of the great things that happened on that particular show, and I was sort of young in my career, was I got to watch 20 years of The Tonight Show, like literally sit in a room as an editor and get paid to watch every moment of Johnny Carson working and the nuance that he brought to comedy and how he could take a joke and shape it, a crowd and play them, how a facial expression could make something that wasn't funny, funny. And I think people that have been, now let's face it, Carson's sort of off the air for a while, and there are other people running those kinds of nighttime shows, and they're all very fun to watch. But Johnny was the master. He could take jokes that were just terrible and make them hilarious, and take jokes that were good and make them better. He was just like a database of comedy and comic genius, not to mention his guests. You know, he had the most talented and funny guests on the show, the classic guests, up to the new comedians. And Johnny started the career of probably, you know, a dozen of the most famous comedians on the air today. So being able to go through all of that comedy in a sort of a controlled way as an editor, I really learned a lot about how comedy works.
I've been told that the masters of comic today, or comedy today, that Johnny really rocketed into, I mean, once they did The Tonight Show, you know, it was like they were on the map, especially if they were extremely talented. But from what I've been able to tell, just talking to folks, and that is, those people still idolize him and look to him as if, you know, he possessed things that they may themselves feel they'll never have.
No question. I mean, the Tonight Show was the graduation ceremony for any stand-up comic. If you got on the Tonight Show, first of all, that was just hitting a home run, just getting on the Tonight Show. And then you did your set in front of the audience, and you'd sort of take a quick peek over to where Johnny was sitting at the desk. And if he waved you over to the desk and you got to walk over after your set and sit down next to him, you were pretty much guaranteed a career. And if you look at, you know, Seinfeld and Ellen, you know, I don't have the names at my fingertips, but there's probably 20 stand-up comics that all have major careers on television because they impressed Johnny in some way. And that was it. Once you got Johnny on the hook, you were going to do very well in your career. I don't know that there's any other thing quite like that today.
I was going to say, though, I think there was also a lot of comedians that I want to say were maybe their career wasn't dying, but they were kind of drifting, you know. And he would bring them on the show, and that was like getting a jump start. you know, seeing some of the older standbys, people that had been at it for a long time, seeing them reappear on The Tonight Show and have interaction with him and Ed McMahon, that was that had to be a shot of adrenaline for those folks.
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm sure that, you know, he had his favorites, too. And, you know, Johnny was Hollywood royalty, and he had you on your show. They were probably friends, and he could resurrect a career as easily as create one. But it was a great time in television. I don't think there's anything quite like it right now. Hopefully there can be again.
But, well, yeah, with the age group of the amateur radio population, I was going to say, I think the majority of us have, grew up, just like you said, The Tonight Show was the last thing we did before we turned the light out at night. So anyways, so man, you really were set up great to come into a situation like producing a comedy television show. What kind of challenges do you run into with this thing? I mean, like subject matter back some time ago used to be a real big deal. You know, and the same holds true today on ham radio. In other words, you hear things on ham radio today that would have never happened 10 years ago, 20 years ago, absolutely. On television, it's the same way. You know, when you go back and look at the Carson show and you look at what you have to do today, what all has changed? What do you have to be careful of and make sure that, you know, either you do or don't do?
Well, interesting. I mean, our goal, of course, always is to entertain and to make things funny. But the country as a whole, especially if you want to go all the way back to Carson or more toward the early days of Norman Lear sitcoms, and those shows had a lot more leeway than we do now. The country's become a lot more conservative. There are a lot more things to fear, I guess, apparently. So the networks and the studios tend to analyze what we're doing and at least have more input on what we're doing and saying and showing. The world has become more corporate, more monetized. So the kinds of commercial references you might make, you know, back in the day for a product or a brand, you probably would not make again on television today. So we mostly try to make our shows funny and entertaining. Of course, we are a family comedy. I've done a bunch of different kinds of shows, ranging from Arrested Development, which was a pretty bawdy show, to The Tim Allen Show, which is very much a family show. So you just adapt your style as a producer to the show you're on. This one, especially with the ham radio fans, you know, the ham radio people tend to be very family oriented and seem to be enjoying the Tim. It's the Tim Allen's thing. It's a good match. And I think, quite frankly, when Reba comes online, and we both premiere on the same night, November 2nd, coming up in about a month or so, I think that the ham radio fans are going to have a place to go on a Friday night to watch a very family-friendly television show. So, you know, what do we monitor as producers? We monitor everything, quite frankly, from the schedule to the budget to the dialogue. But mostly what we want is fun content for our viewers to watch.
Well, you know, there's some folks, though, that are just, I guess I want to say, we're looking at Tim Allen, there are some folks that are just naturals for comedy. I mean, they could play a serious role in a movie somewhere and pull that off just fine. But they just have this thing. It's like you were talking about, the right facial expression. Sometimes all it takes is a look, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
To bring something out. You go back and you think about, go back as far as, say, Lucille Ball. And you go back and watch some of those programs that it's so simple. You know, the set so confined. I mean, I don't know. I don't guess they had a whole lot to work with, you know. But,
Lucy is, of course, a great example because it was really Desi Arnaz that invented the form we all work in, and that's the situation comedy. It's the, you know, simple indoor sets with three cameras shooting simultaneously. Of course, now we use four, and of course, now we're on high-definition videotape. But the basic form of how I Love Lucy was shot is exactly how we're shooting our show right now while I'm talking to you. In fact, it was also Desi who created the concept of the network, which is to say, to have a program airing at the exact same time across the country. Before then, you'd get the show when you got the show, and you'd broadcast it when you got it. And there would be people flying back and forth across the country with film canisters. Now, of course, you know, it's all being done through the internet or fiber-fed or satellite-fed. But all of those developments came out of Lucy. And but to go back to your point about Tim is definitely in that ilk. I mean, we have a audience of 250 live people. So for those of you that might think, you know, people complain about quote unquote canned laughter, not on our show, of course. Tim will walk out with his castmates in front of 250 people who are really standing on their feet applauding and cheering because he's very funny, and he can take lines that are well-written and make them funnier and take lines that may not be and make those funny too. He's beloved by his audience, both here in Studio City when we shoot the show, and quite frankly, he's got a big following in Las Vegas as a stand-up comic. And I'm sure everyone knows, or if now you'll hear his voice everywhere if you think about it. He's the voice of Campbell Soup and the voice of Michigan, the state of Michigan, and he's the voice of Chevy Trucks. And everybody knows Buzz Lightyear and from Toy Story. And, you know, he's everywhere.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, and that is that when you get national products that want that voice, and it's kind of interesting because a lot of folks will hear a Campbell Soup commercial. The voice is very familiar, and they feel like they can trust the voice. They may not necessarily correlate who it is immediately, you know, over a period of time, or if someone says, hey, that's Tim Allen. Oh, yeah, that is who that is, you know. Mm-hmm. But it is a trusting sort of thing. You know, in other words, there's this familiar voice. There's nothing threatening about it. And actually, the voice, the tone of voice that you would associate with comedy or having heard Tim Allen in whatever role he played. But although you may not connect the dots when you hear the Campbell Soup commercial, so
yeah,
but,
exactly.
But it's
a good strategy for the Campbell Soup people and the Chevy Trucks people because it does give you that immediate comfort level to hear that calm, you know, secure, and yet you know he is a man's man kind of a guy. So you, especially where trucks are concerned, you know, you go, that sounds like a truck I might want to own. That guy sounds like he knows what he's talking about, and you know, of course, that's Tim and that's his talent.
Let me ask you a couple of questions here. Now, you kind of gave us your background on ham radio, but you did a pretty you went through it pretty quickly. my question is that today, with your schedule as a television producer, my God, you couldn't have any more jam schedule than somebody that's producing a television show. How do you find time for amateur radio? And my question is what is it now today that really flips your switch in terms of amateur radio?
Wow, that's an interesting question. The first part of that is, yeah, I agree. I don't really have a ton of time, but I try to squeeze in some contacts when I can. We work a pretty long day here. I'm fortunate in that I get to, I have a lot of really cool amateur radio gear around me because it's featured on the show, so I tend to have, you know, at least a handheld in my office. Let me digress by saying, first of all, the show itself uses a lot of radio. A television show, just like a movie, has a number of departments, and all of those departments are coordinated through radio. So in my office, which is about a football field or so away from the stage, I've got a business band UHF mobile radio on my desk with a little, probably like about a six-element beam pointed at my stage. So my assistant directors who run the stage have radios, and the prop people and the transportation people and the wardrobe people all have radios, and they're all on different channels. So I get to be able to sit in my office and watch the show as it progressively shoots on a television monitor and communicate to my crew through. So that's a lot of radio all day right there. But then I also have in my office a Yaesu VX8, which is actually a four-band handheld, and I do get to monitor my favorite repeaters on that. I do occasionally go on D-Star through a D-Star dongle, because I can do that from a computer in the office if I want to do that. And at home I have HF and a bunch of antennas, so on a Saturday morning sometimes I'll try to plug into 10 meters, and as the day progresses, if I have the free time, I'll just move across the bands and see what kind of activity there is.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. Our guest today, John Amadeo. That's NN6JA, the television producer for the TV show The Last Man Standing, starring Tim Allen as the fictional character Mike Baxter, who plays the role of a ham on that show. We'll be back right after this. In this day and time, what we don't have much of is time. And if you enjoy operating and you just don't get a chance to, you need to take a look at the Trans World antennas, TW2010, and all the models that operate the different bands. Go to YouTube and put in Trans World antennas, and see how simple this thing is to set up. I mean, it is easy. It goes together fast. And, of course, that gives you more time to operate. You're not fussing around with an antenna. In an emergency situation, it is absolutely necessary. You need to have one of these. If not for yourself, for your club, or whoever it is that may get called out on a scene where you've got to operate and you've got to be able to set up quickly and efficiently. Go to their website, and that's transworldantennas.com. Transworldantennas.com. There's a link up there to YouTube, and you can see how quickly this antenna sets up, how easy it is to operate. Transworldantennas.com. Here at the QSO Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website. It's simply QSOradioshow.com and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. Our guest today, John Amadeo, NN6JA, the television producer of the TV show The Last Man Standing, starring Tim Allen as Mike Baxter, a theoretical ham who plays that role on the television show. So let's get back to QSO.
So I do get to play with a little bit of ham radio. I wouldn't say that I get to ever really sit for any length of time and work a lot of VX or anything like that, but I squeeze it in.
So if you had, right now, if we had that time machine and it could insert a three-hour block in your day, you could do mm-hmm. anything you wanted to do, and you could do it from anywhere. You could do it from home, you could do it from the office, wherever. What would you do with those 3 hours on amateur radio?
Well, I would probably be on HF. And as much as I'm a huge fan of all the new technologies, and I have the path for all the new technologies, I have D-Star here, and I have, obviously anybody has Echolink or IRLPs and all that. And I do use all of those things to communicate with friends and family back in New York. And I'm, as I said, from New York originally. My brother is a ham on Long Island, and some of my childhood friends are hams. So that generally takes something like a D-Star or Echolink to make a sort of simple communication path to them. But given the time to just play with a radio, I'm more likely to get on HF. So if it's in the morning, I will see if 10 meters is happening. And if not, I'll just sort of move up the bands to see, you know, where the commotion is. Because I feel like... I was explaining ham radio actually to my writers, and I asked them to look at it like fly fishing, like the time you would spend peacefully in a lake casting to try to find, you know, getting a big fish. So I think HF for me is still going to be like that, where you're putting a call out to see where you can get, what you can get, you know, get some interesting contacts going. And I think that's what I would do at that time. I think D-Star for me is a great thing, and interlinked repeaters are a great thing because I can have reliable communications with friends on the push of a button. But to actually just spend the time for the hobby, I kind of like it to be HF.
Well, you know, one of the things that seems to be a lost art, I mean, everybody chases DX, and people do contests, you know. And, of course, you've got a special event station coming up. We're going to talk about that here just in a minute. But the thing that seems to be one of the most lost arts is, and you'll find it in pockets on ham radio, and that's just rag chewing. You know, mm-hmm. I can recall in ham radio where there were frequencies, especially on the 75-meter band at night, where there were a group of guys that hung out every night. I mean, night after night after night. It was like the Cheers bar, you know.
Absolutely.
Everybody would come in and sit out, and they'd talk, and they got to be friends. And at one point, I remember traveling from Tennessee to Michigan, and I made a little route, and I stopped at about four hams' houses. On the way, it took me, you know, a week to do something I could have driven in a day, and was invited to spend the night, and we had a chance to spend time together and really get acquainted, and it was incredible. And I thought, what other hobby could you do that in? And I can't think of a thing.
Oh, that's absolutely true. That's the camaraderie and the friendships you can make while in ham radio. And, you know, the rag chewing thing is something we very much did as kids. Growing up on Long Island, we'd all get on whatever at the time. I guess it was 2 meters, and late at night when you could be simplex and you'd reach a lot of your friends and just sit and pass the mic around and chat. So that's a lot of fun. A little harder to do these days. The emphasis seems to be on repeaters. I know in Southern California, there's been a lot of talk lately about simplex operation, and I always had to chuckle because, really, it all started as simplex, and the repeaters, you know, came into it, and now I think a lot of people think of communications as only something that's either digital or going through repeaters, and, of course, what it really is, you know, just two people talking on radios.
Now, one thing that I will say this, that I do regret about VHF communication. I remember when I first got into ham radio, there was a lot of guys using these Motorola rigs that were retired from commercial purposes. I mean, I think most of them had tubes in them. I mean, but they used them on VHF, and they were broadband, and the audio was so sweet. It was so nice. I mean, it sounded like an FM broadcast station when people were talking. You know, unlike, I mean, it would really contrast because you go back to the old single sideband tube equipment. And the audio you got out of that stuff, as compared to that broadband FM, it was really a contrast, you know. And then today, of course, I tuned down the 75-meter band here the other night, and I caught about 3 or 4 AM stations on. And, boy, the audio was just really sweet. I really enjoyed listening to those guys.
The old radios are still really fun. I have the only thing I have that's truly vintage right now is a Heathkit 101, which is just a fun radio to have in my bag of tricks, and I'm hoping to find a place for it on the set someday so that the fans can see a piece of vintage gear in the show, but I haven't had the opportunity yet.
At least it'll be authentic. There was the movie, what was the movie? You probably know exactly which one I'm talking about.
It would be either
Frequency.
HF or Frequency or Phenomenon.
Yeah, it was Frequency, and the only disappointment I had is when I started looking really close, that the radio was, I think it was just the receiver portion of a two-piece Heathkit. In other words, it was not actually a transceiver or something along that line. You know, so at least we know when we see it on the television show that you are producing, that the radio will be accurate in its role. So
I can guarantee you that. I mean, we've gone through great pain. Honestly, I did it for Tim's benefit. Tim is an actor who likes to have a lot of realism around him. I think it helps him as a performer to have, you know, items on the set be real. So I brought the radio gear out the very first time. It was all wired, all hooked up to power. It was powered up. It was tuned into stations. I had antennas, had, you know, real wire coming out of the back of the radios up to the perms, which is the upper part of the stage, and I had antennas up there already. So Tim gave a big smile, and he said, you know, you could call Europe from this radio. I said, oh, yeah, I know. You could call Europe from this radio. And it was all working, and he got a big kick out of it, so it was fun to do that.
What's been some of the reaction you've had? I'm curious about that from viewers. Do you get viewer email or viewer mail or something, or do you get feedback from viewers?
We do. We get a lot of feedback. I mean, you know, in both cases, we certainly have. If you go on ABC.com, you're going to see the primary web page that ABC runs, which is about the show in general. And we get a lot of feedback about the show in general. But then the staff of Last Man Standing, let me digress and say that about 12 of the staff members on the show are ham radio operators. So that gave us a lot of capability in terms of getting stuff done for ham radio. We created pretty early on a Facebook page, which is the KA0XTT Facebook page. And if you log on to that, you'll see a lot of comments about the show and a lot of photographs of the ham station and a history, if you will, of all of the goings-on that we've had with the ham station. And we've done a number of special events from the stage and had some VIP types come by and work our station. So, you know, it's been a fun thing. And that's the comments that people have been making have been overwhelmingly positive. I think people really enjoy Mike Baxter as a ham radio operator. I don't think we have to do too much with it. It's just the fact that he's a normal guy who has a real life, a family, he's a businessman, and he also enjoys ham radio as a hobby. Has been getting a lot of great and positive comments from the general public. Well, really, I guess it's not the general public, it's the ham radio public. But part of the point of that was to bring radio into the consciousness of the general public as much as we can do.
Well, I guess I was curious as to, I can only imagine the comments you get from hams, but I was just curious as to had you felt any impact from the general public? Has anyone noticed and commented, I guess I want to say over and above the normal observation level? In other words, has it got attention to the point where you're getting some feedback on that?
Yeah, but a little bit. I think, you know, overwhelmingly we're going to get feedback or comments more from the hams because they tend to be more knowledgeable about what that gear is. But there are people that are outside the ham radio world that have commented about the radio gear and you know, and ask questions about it, which is really what you would hope. You would want people to say, well, what is that and why does he have it and what can you do with it? That's really the money question, because you really want to be able to answer that question about what the benefits of amateur radio are. So we have had those conversations a little bit, certainly on the show with the writers, with the producers of the show. At least they're educated to what ham radio is and, more importantly, isn't, because, you know, when you put radio gear on a stage, what you're going to get first are people walking by it thinking it's CB radio. So then you have to have that conversation. But, you know, the ham public has been overwhelmingly popular, overwhelmingly positive about the gear. And, of course, you know, hams are obsessive, so they want to know, you know, what's the radio and what frequency is it on, what antenna is it running to. It's the next step for that will be to talk directly to the ham base, which we've done a couple of times in a limited way. In our next event, we're going to be going in a much more broad, general kind of a radio event, so we can talk to hopefully many, many ham radio fans.
Well, we're gonna promote the daylights out of this for you, so that you get overloaded with, you'll have pileups. Okay, the thing that I guess I want to say that really makes a distinction about this. And this is something we as amateur radio operators have suffered from, I guess I want to say, going back a ways. You know, first off, ham radio was what your grandfather did in the basement of his house. You know, the big, huge boxes with tubes and strange noises coming from the basement and all that kind of thing. And people kind of had that perception. I think the other perception was that hams are really abnormal geeks, okay? We are the slide rule in the pocket, thick glasses. That we've had that stereotype thrown on us. This television program, show Last Man Standing that you're producing, does more for dispelling all of that than we as hams could work on for years, you know, to try to dispel it. But the television show just does it. I mean, it's like you don't have to have Tim sit down in front of the radio. It's just the radio on the set, you know, and the statement that makes. Plus the fact the set looks incredible. In other words, what is amateur radio today? Well, it's not great big gigantic boxes with 9909s and 6146s and 807s and all kinds of things like that. The look of the station on the set tells a story in itself. So you've done a marvelous job putting that together. And I really want to commend you, because I think that's one of the biggest hurdles that amateur radio has had, and that has been, for some reason, I think maybe it's because people just don't understand what it is. And
well, thanks. So that's very, very positive remarks on your behalf. Part of it, I guess, is me and my neatness, but also Tim is a very neat guy. So I built the station. I wanted it to be very modern. At the moment, there's an ICOM IC7600, which is an amazing radio, and an IC2820 for D-Star and UHF VHF. So it's not a lot of gear, but boy, it has a lot of capability, because it'll go from 160 all the way up to 70 centimeters and do a D-Star as well. So it's a lot of stuff, but it's in a nice, small, compact package. It's very neat. I've got a couple of Comet meters in there, and I do have a code key, although nobody's really asked too much about that from the civilian side. But it all works, you know, and as I said, it's all wired to antenna, so it's all capable of working. And I've certainly used it, and the crew has gone down and used the radio station a lot. But I think it was important to make it look like it belonged in the office, so it wasn't some kind of an appendage to the office. And it sounds like you're saying we accomplished that, and I'm happy to hear that. It's kind of neat. There's a nice display of QSL cards that Mike Baxter would have received, And we do rotate those out. So fans that have sent in their cards, and we've gotten about 2,000 QSL cards from fans around the world, really. And it's shocking because we're not really airing around the world yet. So I presume that that comes from D-Star contacts we've had in Canada and in Japan and in Australia and New Zealand. We display probably 50 or so QSL cards fit on that wall behind Mike's ham radio station, and then we do occasionally move through and refresh them so people will get to see their QSL cards. But, I think you're right. Ham radio gets a bad rap. As a matter of fact, I did go to Dayton this year to the Dayton Hamvention, and the ARRL had asked me if I wanted to do some kind of a forum, and I chose to do a speech about ham radio and the media and how ham radio is treated in the media. And it's exactly what you would expect. The image of ham radio does go back to the old days of ham radio. People are either completely unaware of ham radio, or they think it's basically CB, or they think it's goofy guys in the basement. And I supported the argument with clips. I mean, if you look at the very famous movies, there's quite a few of them that feature ham radio. And, of course, everybody knows Frequency, and everybody knows Phenomenon, and actually the opening sequence of Contact. But then there's also things like The Simpsons have used ham radio and The Munsters. And there are almost overwhelmingly negative viewpoints of ham radio, when, in fact, it's hard to understand why that evolved over the years, because ham radio has been such a positive and powerful force when you think about the disaster relief aspect of it, or just the hobby aspect of it, or the amount of technical knowledge that one gains by involving themselves in ham radio. So I think one of the things that I've been trying to do with the station on the show and whatever I can do personally is to educate the general public to understand how positive a force ham radio is or can be, and sort of get with the program rather than trying to make fun of something you don't understand. So, that's the short story.
Well, I told you the brief, and I don't repeat it because I've told it on the air before, about what amateur radio was able to do in terms of my two sons and the current positions they have as engineering people. You said you had a parallel story, and this may be part of what you told already, but maybe you want to just kind of make a few points in that, because I think that this is all part of this image problem. Whereas people don't realize what amateur radio can do in a young person's life.
Absolutely, sure. I mean, it did also have the opportunity in Dayton to address a youth forum, and I pretty much said the same thing. I mean, as a kid, I was interested in radio, so I studied the principles of radio. I mostly just read the ARRL handbook over and over again until I understood what it was trying to say to me. And it gave me an electronics and a technical background that allowed me to immediately move into the workplace. So when I moved to Los Angeles and needed to get a job, the first job I applied for was basically a glorified TV video installer. Now, we're talking about 1980s here. So in the 1980s, a VCR would have been a 3/4-inch tape deck that would have cost about $5,000, and the company I worked for would have charged about $250 to install one. Of course, these days you can buy a VCR. Well, I don't know if you can buy a VCR. I guess you'd buy a DVD player, and you'd probably buy it for about $49, and your kid would install it for you. But back then, it was quite a to-do. And having had that job for a very short amount of time, I moved right into television production. I was able to be a video engineer and a video editor without any retraining at all. It just came out of my basic knowledge of electronics, which I learned entirely through ham radio.
Well, it's interesting because I had a gentleman get on the radio with me. Actually, was it Dayton or Huntsville? I can't remember which one it was. We were on the air in Dayton. If we should have known you there, you'd come by the booth and got on the air with us. But
next year.
there you go. But he pointed out a young man, and he said, "Now this guy has these young people have absolutely no interest in radio." He said, "It's all internet. That's all they know. That's all they think of. They're not interested in radio, and radio as we know it will cease to exist when you and I and everyone else our age is gone." And I thought for a second, and I thought, no, that's not correct. Because these young people, when they sit down and they see communications on HF, and they see the magic of the technical side of being able to put their hands on this stuff and work with it, the ones I've seen they completely light up. They get it. It's just a matter of having it presented to them. Now, you know, it's not 100% sale. Not every kid's interested in it, but a good portion of them are. And the ones that are, you don't have to dress it up. They see it for what it is, and it grabs them. There's just something very, very much magic about plugging a wire into the back end of a radio sitting on your desk without internet or without anything.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's funny because a number of my production assistants on the show got their technician's licenses last season, and I just noticed that they were out there, you know, texting one another and Facebooking one another, and I went, you know, with a little bit of study, you'd actually have your ham license, and you could do essentially the same things in a much more fun way, and they were all interested. They all studied. We'd have ham radio lunches and talk through the question pool and what those questions meant, and after a couple of months of just chatting about it, we gave a test right here on the studio lot, and I think we made, by the end of the season, we had 12 new hams out of the deal. So what you're saying is absolutely correct. If you think about what kids do with radio, they're using their handheld wireless devices to communicate with one another and text with one another and, you know, send video clips. And frankly, this is stuff that hams have been doing for many, many years. When I was a teenager, we had handheld radios with touch-tone pads, and we could make telephone calls through them long before there was a cellular telephone. So I think, by the way, a point I made to my 20-something-year-old PAs here, and they were all very surprised to hear that as kids we were able to make telephone calls through handheld devices.
Well, yeah, and ham radio has always been ahead of the game in so many areas. I mean, I get a big bang out of hearing Wayne Green talk about the fact that there would be no cell phone technology today if it hadn't been for ham radio repeaters. But you know what's weird is that you realize that the young people that are using cell phones, see, to them, this is not a radio. Radio is totally divorced from these things. They look at the cell phone as being some sort of a device all to itself. It doesn't operate with radio waves or, you know, it's just there, you know. So when you start talking about amateur radio to these people, they don't, especially the young people, they don't equate cell phones to it at all. They see it as another form of something magical or something incredible, and they don't get the connection between the cell phone and the radio. They don't understand that thing in their hand is a radio. It doesn't even cross their mind.
No, it's very funny because I used that as an example, and we talked when we were in the office here talking about repeaters and what a repeater is and how that works. And I actually used, you know, cell phone technology as a way to parallel what they were doing with their cell phones and how that worked in reality and how a handheld would work with repeaters. And there was exactly what you're suggesting. There was a lot of, really? You're kidding. You know, they never thought about the fact that the wireless device they were holding in their hand was both transmitting and receiving and sending data and, you know, all of the stuff that, you know, ham radio does or has done for a very long time. But you're correct. They were surprised about how the technology worked and what the technology was based on. I think kids think it's magic. They pick up a cell phone, hit a button, they talk to somebody. It's magic. But it actually is very grateful to understand how and why that worked.
Well, you know, I guess the other thing, too, and that is that as time goes on, of course, the cell phone technology will become more and more separate in terms of radio, because it is already, that's going to get worse. You know, it's not going to equate to radio. But as things come along, like IRLP, Echolink, D-Star, all these different things that come on us, for example, even doing satellite communications and EME. Now, that'd be a comedy skit for you, for Tim Allen, is to get him tangled up and trying to do an EME session or something.
That would be fun.
You know, with all these different things that ham radio has to offer now, these are things that are just so fascinating. And once again, I don't think they really need any dressing up. I think the big enemy we have as far as young people go, and that is when I call them the curmudgeons. Okay, when the curmudgeons are on the air, they tend to run the young folks off. They don't want to make them welcome. They don't want them, you know. I mean, there's that element. So I think that it behooves all of us to, when we hear a young voice on the radio, to jump in there and talk to them and be friendly and welcome them on in and encourage them to operate their radio.
I think that's a really important point. I think that I have, you know, I got my VE so that I could participate in the testing of my own employees. But in meeting and talking with other VEs, I've certainly heard that story of, you know, kids that were interested in radio, and then after coming to one or two club meetings, they just lost interest, or even worse than that, you know, a kid who would walk into a meeting and look around and pull their phone out of their pocket, start texting, turn around and walk out. I think it, you know, amateur radio, this is actually not accurate anymore. I used to feel that, well, amateur radio skews older. Well, of course, it does skew older. However, as I'm sure you're aware, the licensing is on the uprise again. And especially since having eliminated the code, I think you're starting to see a whole new crop of ham radio operators come into the game. So it's important, yeah, for the older guys, if you really want the hobby to survive and grow, you do have to be welcoming of the younger, maybe less experienced operators getting on the air. I mean, that's actually what this is all about. I assume, for me, it always was, you want to enjoy the hobby and you want to share the hobby. I'm not really looking for a closed communications device. I mean, I have a telephone. If I want to call one person in particular and chat, I can do that. But on radio, I expect to be, you know, it's more of a party line. I can talk to someone, but if somebody bumps into that conversation and wants to join in, I fully expect it and I fully appreciate it, because that's really what the hobby's about. So yes, if you have curmudgeons and they can easily, you know, put off younger kids, and I think it's important to not do that, to resist that temptation. You know, if someone doesn't really know how to operate, there are polite, soft ways to help them learn how to operate. It's probably better than yelling at them or telling them they're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I haven't seen much. I mean, I've noticed Citizens Band Citizens Band basically has waned really badly. In other words, I was one of those when I was really young, was into Citizens Band before I was into ham radio. Of course, it was a different Citizens Band back then than it is now. But I haven't run into a lot of folks that are confused about Citizens Band and ham radio. It seems like the only thing they know is that guy's got a box on his desk with a microphone and he talks in it. You know, and I don't know that they can tell the difference between the two. And that's one thing I will say this about the television show. You've dressed it up and made it look really good, you know, brought reality to it. And I think that makes a very, very bold statement. And you know, you really ought to get an award for this, because you've got all the members of your set involved in amateur radio. You know, you've gotten Tim Allen interested in it. You've brought it on national television. I mean, my goodness. I mean, it's if everybody just had that kind of enthusiasm and drive about the hobby, we'd be in good shape. You know, we'd be in
thank you for saying that. I mean, my reward has been just the amount of fun. It's like, I don't mean to say it gratuitously. It really, you know, I'm a ham at heart, and to have a ham station, a functioning, working ham station on stage has really been kind of a lot of fun for me, because I hadn't built a station in a while, and this is a pretty good one, let me tell you. And I've had a lot of cooperation from manufacturers too, naturally. I couldn't have done it. But the show is a family comedy. It's not a show about a ham radio operator. So the ham gear is something that wouldn't really be normally a budgeted item in a TV show like this. So that's why you would normally on a TV show see a bunch of boxes with knobs and knobs and lights in them, but they wouldn't really be ham radio equipment, because you couldn't afford to do that on a show. But with some participation from the industry, I was able to put a very fun, workable ham radio station together. So for me, the joy in it was just the doing. You know, I got to, I have the ability to sort of go wherever I want to go on my stage, including the roof. So I've got a number of antennas on the roof, which, you know, I don't know that anybody's ever done that on a live, while we're shooting a live TV show, and you see the meters and the ham radio equipment moving in the background. That's because it's actually on a frequency receiving signals on the, you know, off the air from antennas on the roof of the stage. So it's just fun to do that, and I hope it translates into fun for the viewers, especially the ham viewers.
Well, now, I'll ask a couple questions. In I know years ago there were tours, you know, obviously there still are, tours of Hollywood and whatnot. Is it possible for folks to visit the set during non-filming hours, or is that something that, I guess I want to say, is that something that's just not done?
I think the best way, if someone were in the L.A. area and they wanted to see the show or the set, it would be you could. It's very easy to get tickets to come and see the show. While we're not shooting the show, we're almost always rehearsing or pre-shooting. Like on a Monday like right now, we are pre-shooting elements of the show that we will need for tomorrow's audience performance. So each day, Monday, it's actually Wednesday to Friday, we rehearse all day long, and then Monday we pre-shoot, Tuesday we shoot the show in front of a live audience. So there's not a lot of time to bring, you know, visitors through the set. However, tickets to the show are very easy to come by. Of course, you'd have to be here in Los Angeles, and then you would go to TVtickets.com, which is a service that provides tickets for all kinds of television shows. And you could easily get a ticket for Last Man Standing and come on down to the show. Now, if you come down to the show and you're a ham radio operator, you might want to put a posting on our Facebook page to let us know that you're an operator and you're going to come down and watch the show, because you never know, you might get some special treatment.
Oh, there you go. Well, I didn't know, because I know it's a busy place. I know television studios are incredibly busy, a lot of people going in different directions, doing different things. And, you know, television's changed, too. I mean, TV's to the point now where there are so many channels as compared to what it was years ago that I think everybody that's involved in television today really has to be on their toes, because it's a super competitive market. And it's not like, you know, it's not like when there was just three television networks, you know. So,
oh, yeah.
But I wondered about that, because I know that's got to be a question going through the minds of those. So if a person is visiting the Los Angeles area, they'd like to take and get tickets to the show, chances are they can do that if they want to.
And absolutely, they... yeah. We shoot the show, not every, but most Tuesday nights is when, I can go to a website here, just so I don't misquote. I don't want to give you dead air here, but
that's a good thing to know, though, because I know that's got to cross the minds of especially hams that would come out to the West Coast for whatever reason, you know, and say, yeah, I wonder if we could get in and watch that thing.
Oh, yeah. There's the site, actually, I'll tell you, the site is TVtickets.com, and they're a service that handles TV tickets for all the TV shows, but you just simply click on the Last Man Standing link, and it'll give you the dates and the times of when we're actually filming, if you will, it's taping and now, and you can just grab a couple of tickets and come on down. As I say, you know, give us a quick email on the Facebook, and especially if you're a licensed ham, that's a special privilege to come down and see the show as a ham. We welcome everyone, obviously, including shortwave listeners, by the way. But you would need to be in the LA area, because we don't take this on the road. So there you go.
Let's talk briefly. I don't want to hold you up any longer. I know you're probably behind now just from taking the time to talk to us, but talk a little bit about your special event station coming up. How can folks participate in this? You know, where is it going to be, and how are you going to be operating, and are you going to have multiple stations, or tell us all about it.
Okay, well, as I said, we've done a number of smaller broadcasting from the stage events in the past, and they were all a lot of fun. And this year, I think we wanted to do one that was all-encompassing. So we've got, as I said, a lot of gear on the stage and a number of operators that work for the show. And we thought we'd throw all of that together and make a special event station. So on Sunday, October 28th, which is, by the way, the last day of the CQ Worldwide Contest, we're going to go on the air from the set of Last Man Standing from the Mike Baxter office, ham radio station. I don't know the exact times and dates yet, but I'll guess for you. Probably we're going to get on the air about 9 or 10 a.m., and that would be Pacific time, because that will give us daylight on the East Coast so that we can try to work through all the bands. So I would assume on the HF side, we'll probably start on 10 meters and move through 15 and 20 and 40 and maybe wind up on 40 or 80 at the end of the day. And we'll work for an hour or so in each band as the sun travels across the country. I will definitely create a schedule for that, and I'll publish that schedule on the KA0XTT Facebook page. And I also, that links to a Twitter account, which is at NN6JA, which is my call sign, so that people will know where to get us. But at the same time, we'll be blogging in real time on the Facebook page to tell people where we are and what frequency we are, because there is a contest going on in HF. We don't want to make a contest, so we'll find an opening, and then we'll Facebook it right away so people can come over and find us. But at the same time, we have D-Star, so people will be able to call into us on D-Star. We're going to use the services of the PAPA group, P-A-P-A, PAPA group here in Southern California. It's a very well put together, big, both analog and D-Star repeater group. And if you've got D-Star, you can point over to the Papa group. And again, we'll give out the reflectors when we get a little closer to the event. And we'll be linking, I would imagine people will be able to echo link into our analog 70-centimeter repeaters also on the Papa group. And at the moment, although I don't have the full approval for it yet, I believe I'm going to have a linked repeater system coming to me from the East Coast, from New York and Orlando, Florida, into Los Angeles. So there's going to be a lot of ways for people all over the country to get into our stage. We will be acknowledging those calls with a very special QSL card. So everyone who gets logged and acknowledged by our control operators here on that day will get a QSL card from the Last Man Standing TV show.
Tell me a little bit now, what what type of antennas are you using? Are you using dipoles? What's up on the roof that you're going to be using for the special event station?
Well, we have a lot of antennas. I have to say that, in particular, Mick Swartnick at Comet, it was really good to us. And for UHF, VHF, we've got a GP1 and a GP3, which are dual band, 70-centimeter, 2-meter antennas. Then we've also got their interesting rotatable dipole, the CHV5X, which gives you 40, 20, 15, and 10, and 6 meters, actually. And then I've got an Alpha Delta, it's a DXLB, which gives you 160, 80, and 40. And I just put up an off-center-fed dipole by Radio Waves, which I have not tuned yet. So we've got three HF antennas up there. They're all, in one form or another, dipoles. And two UHF, VHF. And I've got a couple of other antennas just like up my sleeve in case I need to throw up another station or another operator. On the radio side, we've got a lot of ICOM gear, the 7600, which is HF and 6 meters, and the 2820, which is UHF, VHF, and D-Star. And I've got a little Yaesu 817, which is going to probably wind up being an East Coast, West Coast link on 70 centimeters that will allow people to also echo link in. So, a lot of gear. I think I'm going to probably have quite a few, net controller types here helping me run this. I'm sure people will want to sneak in their own radios. The radio is not so hard. Getting more antennas on the roof gets to be challenging.
I can imagine. So how do you route those? I mean, can you just simply go, can you go like behind the set and straight up, or do you have to wind around?
They mostly, I know that, this is where the ham thing comes in. I'm sure some of the people do think I'm a little crazy, but I had the studio had to put in a pass-through for me. So they put in a nice big 2-inch pipe through the roof of the stage that's all perfectly waterproofed and with a rain hat and all that, so that all the coaxials come off the roof through that direct and then just drop straight down into the Mike Baxter set so that I don't have to have excessively long cables. I have probably room for one more antenna easily in that rain hat. But on the event day, I mean, there's all kinds of things that could happen. I think it'll be a special event station that it might be like a little bit of a mini field day, if in a way, because we could probably put some things up in the parking lot if we had to. And I guess I would like it to be something in between a contest and a field day. I'm not really sure what it'll really turn into, but it'll be as big as we can make it.
Well, that'd be an interesting field day location. I will say that. That would be a good place. So it's interesting though, with the opening going up to the roof and everything. It's the first thing I always think about is running open wire line. And I ran into a fellow here not too long ago that said that you can do that with two pieces of coax. And I had never heard that before. Now, whether or not it works or not.
Either. That's interesting, though.
Because I've often there's places I want to run open wire line. You can't do it because it's so close to metal. And he says, two pieces of coax. Any of you guys out there that are listening that are really savvy, write me an email. Let me know. Will that work? Can you take two pieces of, what is the high power small 50 ohm, is it RG8U or RG8, mm-hmm. RG8 something?
We're using all LMR 400 because we just really need the extra flexibility, quite frankly, to get it where it needs to go. But yeah, 213 would be probably great.
I think maybe it's RG8X. I'm not sure. But it's a higher power 50 ohm line. I thought, you run a pair of those things and run open, like open wire. I don't know if it would work or not. Somebody out there knows. Somebody's tried
I'm
it
sure.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on board. Once again, that special event station is October 28th on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be called K6T, T for Tim.
K6, K6T is the call sign. And this is going to be on Sunday. It is going to start around 9 o'clock Pacific time, somewhere between 9 and 10.
Correct.
And I guess you'll be posting. Now, if folks want to try to sneak and figure out what frequency you guys are, or if you've decided to monitor a particular frequency, where's the best online source to get the inside dope on this?
That's going to probably be our Facebook page, and that's, you know, facebook.com/KA0XTT, which is the fictitious call sign we made up for Mike Baxter. And the reason I say that is because there is a contest going on that day. We want to be sensitive to the contesters, so we want to find openings. And we'll probably, you know, what we'll probably do is put out a schedule that says what band at what time, and then post the actual frequencies as we find them on the day.
All right. And we'll as soon as I find that out, we'll put it up on the QSO webpage as well. And
great.
That'll help. Of course, you guys are going to have a pileup, I'll tell you.
I'm hoping for a big pileup.
And I think it's a good idea to do it on the same day as a contest, because what it does is there's a lot of guys that have a lot of folks on the air. I mean, there's just a lot of people that make arrangements to take that day off and to get on the radio and to be on the radio all day long. And so I think that's a good idea. I don't think you're going to have any problems, you know, interference or anything like that. I think there's room for everybody. Just all you have to have is a little courtesy. And I think that's not a problem for most hams. Now, some, but most, no. So,
well,
anyway.
You know, all of this is about getting on the air and protecting our bandwidth. So that's, we're doing our part.
Yeah, and that's another good point. And I'll kind of close out with this, because I don't want to keep you forever. And that is one thing about having an amateur station on a network television show, namely Last Man Standing, and that is the fact that it does make a statement to everyone that this is an important hobby. This is a recognized hobby. You know, these frequencies are needed by amateur radio, not by some commercial concern. And this is a battle that's been fought for a long, long time, as there's been a lot of special services that wanted the frequencies. And even though we broadcast right now on commercial international shortwave frequencies, the ham frequencies really need preservation, because there's a lot of special interests that would just love to commandeer those things.
I couldn't agree more. That's been one of my my primary reasons for trying to bring ham radio into the forefront of the general public.
Well, John, I thank you so much for coming on board. I think what you're doing is really incredible. Yeah, I mean, I've gotten a bang out of hearing about all this, and to think your whole staff, you've got most of those fellas there getting their ham tickets and whatnot. We got to get them off the cell phone texting, though, and get them on the air. So,
right.
You know, and that necessarily is not an easy job. So anyways, but I thank you so much, and be sure and tell your entire crew that we really appreciate what they're doing. You be to pass word along to Tim Allen that the folks at the QSO radio show applaud his move in helping promote this hobby, really. And this has been an incredible time talking to you, and I want to have you back sometime. So is any news or anything you're doing a special event station or something comes down the pike, you be sure and get us on the horn and let us know. Let's go on the air and talk about it.
Well, thanks so much. It's been my pleasure.
All righty. Thank you, sir, and you have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye.
One of the things we noticed at the Dayton Hamvention 2012 was the number of people that came up to the QSO radio booth and said, "Hey, I got my ticket by studying with Ham Test Online. My wife got her license through studying with Ham Test Online. My son got his ticket. All of my kids got their tickets with Ham Test Online." I mean, it went on and on and on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I've looked at all different kinds of study materials for getting your ham ticket. And either, there's a rule, they're either cram sessions where you just memorize the answers, or they're so technical that you can get the ticket providing you want to study for the rest of your life. But Ham Test Online is kind of a perfect blend of that. In other words, they teach you. You actually learn the material. They give you pictures, simple descriptions, however. Rather than a book that rambles on and on and on and on about something, it's concise. It's to the point. It's where your mind can grasp it. And then when you see that question come around again on the test, you're ready for it, because you've got a brief overview. I mean, you don't know all the technical implications of some mathematical formula, but you have a good idea on the concept, I want to say, of how something works or operates. Therefore, you know how to pick the right answer. Now, if, say, you're studying and you get the wrong answer, it will feed you back that question again and again and again. And finally, you can't help but learn it. You can go up to Ham Test Online and literally spend hours if you wish, and it doesn't bore you. You don't feel like you're not yawning like reading into a book or listening to a tape recording or something. It's a very unique experience. If you know someone that you'd like to see get their ticket, give them a gift certificate. Give them a membership to Ham Test Online. If you want to upgrade and get the next license up, enroll with Ham Test Online. Don't fool around. Don't waste your time. The technician ticket's only around $20 for like 2 years. You can't miss. Go to their website. It's so simple. HamTestOnline.com. That's HamTestOnline.com. A lot of radio amateurs get a big bang out of building antennas and experimenting, and I think we all do from time to time. But there comes a time when you're just dead serious about making contacts, and you want the antenna to be right. You want it to be a professionally designed, optimized piece of workhorse gear that's going to reach out there and do exactly what you want it to do. And the experimenting's over with. You're serious about operating. You're serious about contesting. You know, you're serious about working satellites or doing moon bounce, or maybe you're going on a de-expedition and you want to put up an array. Now, I'm not talking about a portable antenna. I'm talking about an array. You want to put something on a tower that's big, that works. If you're looking for that kind of an antenna system, there's one place to look, and that's M Squared Antennas. M Squared, their website is simply M2Inc.com. That's M2, and then Inc.com, M2Inc.com, M Squared Antennas. What you're going to find is HF monobanders. You're going to find HF log periodics. You're going to find HF multibanders, 6-meter antennas, 2-meter antennas, 220 megahertz antennas, 440, 902 to S-band. You're going to find their horizontal Omni, the thing that, boy, I'll tell you what, you're working moon bounce. You want to work moon bounce and you want to work satellites. They've got it knocked. They've got all the EME products you could possibly imagine. They have preamps. They have rotators. They have rotator controls. They've got phasing cables. I mean, they've got it all figured out, including preamps and solid-state amplifiers. Now, if that's what you're into, that's it. I'm telling you, one place to go, M Squared Antennas. Once again, their website is M2Inc.com. That's M followed by the numeral 2, Inc.com. Or you can go to our website, QSOradioshow.com. Go to their website, take a look around, and you know what? You can pick up the phone and you can call them and ask them questions about what it is you're trying to do, and they'll tell you what you need, and they'll work with you. M Squared Antennas. Here at the QSO Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website. It's simply QSOradioshow.com and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio and shortwave radio. And this week, ladies and gentlemen, if you missed the Huntsville Ham Fest, and if you missed the Huntsville Ham Fest broadcast, now's your chance. We're going to re-air the Huntsville Ham Fest, but we're going to do it in portions because it's obviously longer than this broadcast today. But we're going to get to it right now, and this is a rebroadcast of the Huntsville Ham Fest 2012 right here on QSO.
couple times down here. We're right on the beach, and I need a beach so we can see the ocean out to Catalina and all the boats going by. So we have all three antennas up here where people are walking by and asking all about ham radio.
Hi, this is Peter Barber, N6RES from Huntington Beach. He's a KC6DIA, 97-year-old ham.
But it's a lot of fun going on between people. It's the radios, it's the fun, it's the fellowship and the friendships that all come together just make it for a very magical weekend.
We're here in Huntsville, Alabama, and this is a special edition of QSO Live from the Huntsville Hamfest at the Von Braun Center. Here's your host, Ted Randall.
Hey, we are live, and this is Huntsville 2012. And I'm looking across over here, and I'm seeing familiar faces and folks that we talked to last year. One in particular is Tom Medlin, K5 or W5KUB. And, you know, years ago, people called him the helmet guy, the helmet cam guy. But now he has, he's got to the point now where he's risen to a brand new level of technology. I mean, he does video all the way here. Now, Tom, what is your, I want to tell folks that are listening where they can go to see your site, which is, isn't it just W5KUB.com? I don't know what microphone's
okay.
Here.
Hello. Yeah, it's W5KUB.com. And right now, all of our viewers are listening to you, Ted. I just put the mic in front of your speaker there, so we're simulcasting right now. I'm going to put some lower thirds on our video of the shortwave frequencies here, so people from our video broadcast can tune in, okay?
There you go. Yeah, I want them to be able to the folks that are listening via shortwave, be able to go to the website and click on that thing and watch what's going on here.
Yeah, and Ted, maybe later today when you get time, I'll come by and we'll bring the video around here and we'll broadcast an interview with you.
Okay, now you're going to put me on, you mean?
Oh, yeah, we're going to put you on there.
Well, now, do you have a wide-angle lens on that camera?
We can kind of go back a little bit, you know. I mean, to get both of us in here, we may have to set it way back here. But listen, go to W5KUB.com. We're giving prizes away to our viewers. We're giving radios away, antenna analyzers, all kinds of stuff. You got to be in our chat room to win. But, man, I love this broadcast. We're going to put this on our video broadcast so people can see your frequencies and hopefully you can get some visitors from our site, and maybe some visitors from your site will come to W5KUB and see the video.
Yeah, and next year what we need to do is we need to take the QSO site and put the video from your site on the front too, so that they're, you know, yeah. Either way they can, you know, they can get us coming and going.
Okay, well, I'm gonna go back over our site, and we'll catch you later. I'll talk with Matt or someone here, and we'll find out what time you'll have available.
All right, that sounds very good. Appreciate it. Yeah, we are live. It's Huntsville 2012, and I've got Michael KF4. I will finish your call sign because you're BOG.
Yeah, that's right.
And you were with us last year, so talk.
Yeah.
And refresh my memory, because my memory doesn't function as well as it used to. Not that it ever functioned well at all to begin with. But anyways, I know you're from this area here. So you're involved in some things here in Huntsville. So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm involved in the special needs program with Madison County Aries, actually. I'm the special needs coordinator for Madison County. And when I talked to you from the year before, I think it was, I was talking about how I help people with disabilities get involved in ham radio. And I'm still involved in that program. And I actually expanded my efforts over the past couple of years. We just recently improved our library's ADA access. We've improved proper signage into the facility. And we've done a lot of enhancements to our local library as far as ADA compliance is concerned. And Aries has now grown significantly over the past couple of years. Membership has grown tenfold. We now have a new emergency coordinator, KK5H, Tim Holland, who is our new emergency coordinator. And he's done a really good job with our team. So he's done really well.
You have to get up on that microphone. It's a very close-talking mic. We're going to pull a little bit toward you. Okay, so now... I guess my question is, I'd like to ask you about your... I think somebody just... They're firing at Charlie Emerson is what they're doing. That's a big gun, and they're trying to find Charlie is what... Anyways, what I was going to ask you about is, how did you get into ham radio? I mean, the very beginning of it, what got your interest, and tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I got involved in ham radio from my father. He has been licensed for as long as I can remember, and he motivated me. To get licensed. One of the things that really got me intrigued was his interest in the HF aspect of it. He likes HF and RTTY. So I basically started studying the theory with audio cassettes. He would record every exam for me, which was kind of an interesting thing because I learned things by audio. You know, which was a neat concept. So my dad was a very big part in getting me involved in ham radio. And I took my test in 1995 as a no-coder. And then in 1996, when the code was still around, I took the Technician Plus. So that's kind of how I got involved in it, which was kind of the neat thing because, you know, they dropped the code shortly after I took the test. So it was a neat thing to actually take the code before it was dropped.
And, you know, I'll tell you something. What was amazing about the situation with the code is the number of folks that have told me, and I mean, I'm talking about folks that are in the business of doing things like producing code practice tapes, the Vibroplex people back years ago, they said this as soon as they dropped the requirement, there was more interest in code than there ever has been. So they're selling more code practice tapes, selling more bugs, selling more everything that is related to code practice and learning CW and that kind of thing.
Well, we talk about code, and we talk about people with disabilities wanting to get involved in amateur radio. And what's funny about this is more and more people with disabilities are getting involved in amateur radio now because the code has been dropped and the requirement for code had been dropped because people with disabilities couldn't get involved in the hobby because of Morse code. Now, the fact of the matter is now you see an increase in it because of that major, major increase. And I've been getting reports now that everybody that has a disability has been staying as one class of license. And you probably can guess what that class of license is. It's been a technician because they don't want to go any further than that because they feel more comfortable having a technician class license. Now, some of them, granted, they'll go for the general class, but they won't go any higher than that.
That's, well... Of course, now, without the code there, there's nowhere near the barrier to the general, you know.
Right.
And the jump, really, between the technician and the general now, I mean, it's significant, but it's not a hurdle. Matter of fact, we have one of our sponsors is Ham Test Online.
Right.
And these guys are incredible. I mean, I think everybody that I know, I've not talked to one soul that said, I used Ham Test Online and I couldn't pass the test. And not one person that I know of. So I guess the thing is that, you know, like I said, the jump between the technician and the general is not nearly the hurdle it used to be because with the code gone, of course, now it's just a matter of studying and getting the, you know, getting the stuff down to where you can pass the test.
Well, one thing that I want to express to this is that there's an agency that helps people with disabilities get involved in ham radio. And I want to give this website out.
Go ahead.
And it's handyhams.org, www.handyham.org. And I recommend this website for anyone with a disability that wants to learn amateur radio, because they have study sessions, they have a radio camp, they have all kinds of neat things that help people with disabilities get involved in amateur radio. They even have an online study deal that allows you to take the course online, which is kind of neat because they have the audio, they have the video tapes available. They even, for the blind, have it to where you can get the Braille available for you so that it's easy to learn and easy to read, which is kind of a neat concept. So I encourage any of you listening to this broadcast to go to that site and just kind of glance at it and listen to a podcast. The podcasts for Handy Hams are open to the public. You don't have to be a member. You can listen to the podcasts and just, you know, listen to them, and you can join if you would like. And I have to say, it's worth the time just to listen to those podcasts. I download them all the time, and it's just a great thing to do. And even if you just give a donation to Handy Hams, it's well worth it. It's well worth your time and just a great cause to donate to. So I hope you'll take the time while you're here in Huntsville, too, to also take the time to enjoy some of the great sights here in Huntsville, because we have some great places that you can go to. As a matter of fact, if you have time, go to the building right across from here, the Huntsville-Madison County Public Library. We call it Fort Book. And the reason why we call it Fort Book is because the kids call it a castle. And it's got hundreds, if not thousands, of books and reading materials and audio materials. And it's on the second floor. There's a blind and physically handicapped floor. And during regular business hours, that room is open for the blind and physically handicapped. So I encourage you, if you have the time, to go down to that library and visit it during normal hours. Because it's very important that we attract all the visitors that are here at the Huntsville Ham Fest to go down to the library and look around and just see, you know, what the library here in Huntsville has to offer our patrons here in the Tennessee Valley. So if you have the time, go out and take a look at it.
That's incredible. We've got, you know, and there's a number of amateurs that I've run into. I guess I want to say more of them that are blind than any other handicap that I've seen so far. And what I've noticed about Handy Hams is they have really been made a huge difference in the lives of those people with, I mean, just all kinds of information and working with them. And it just, you know, they're just a good organization. I have nothing good to say about them, and I encourage folks to donate to them and help them out, because
right.
A person doesn't ask for a handicap.
No.
And the thing of it is that the life becomes more difficult than the average individual, you know. So so it's good to have an organization that can help stand in the gap and make a difference like that.
Right. And the other thing too, it's a great organization to be involved in, to make donations to. And I can honestly say this, if it wasn't for Courage Center, there would be a lot of kids that would not be able to get their licenses right now. So please, I encourage you, if you're listening to this podcast, or if you're listening to it after the broadcast begins, to please call the Courage Center or go online to their website, make a donation. Because it's really, really worth the time. And also, if you're listening to the broadcast and you're within the Huntsville area, look up the website hmcracies.org and attend one of our meetings, because we're always looking for new people. And even if you're from surrounding counties, we would love to have you, because we're always looking for the people from surrounding counties. We've had a lot of visitors from other counties come and see us.
I want to thank you so much for coming by and talking with us here. I really do. And also, if you would, leave your information you know, like either Matt or David here, and let's get together and do a radio show, you know, on over the phone, one of the regular QSO shows. So, yeah. Are we flipped there?
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll leave one of my cards with you, and we'll try and hook up, maybe do a regular phone QSO or something.
There you go.
I will do that.
I thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO and a rebroadcast of the Huntsville Ham Fest 2012. We'll be back right after this. A lot of radio amateurs get a big bang out of building antennas and experimenting, and I think we all do from time to time. But there comes a time when you're just dead serious about making contacts, and you want the antenna to be right. You want it to be a professionally designed, optimized piece of workhorse gear that's going to reach out there and do exactly what you want it to do. And the experimenting's over with. You're serious about operating. You're serious about contesting. You know, you're serious about working satellites or doing moon bounce, or maybe you're going on a de-expedition and you want to put up an array. Now, I'm not talking about a portable antenna. I'm talking about an array. You want to put something on a tower that's big, that works. If you're looking for that kind of an antenna system, there's one place to look, and that's M Squared Antennas. M Squared, their website is simply m2inc.com. That's m2, and then inc.com, m2inc.com, M Squared Antennas. What you're going to find is HF monobanders. You're going to find HF log periodics. You're going to find HF multibanders, 6-meter antennas, 2-meter antennas, 220 megahertz antennas, 440, 902 to S-band. You're going to find their horizontal Omni, the thing that, boy, I'll tell you what, you're working moon bounce. You want to work moon bounce and you want to work satellites. They've got it knocked. They've got all the EME products you could possibly imagine. They have preamps. They have rotators, they have rotator controls, they've got phasing cables. I mean, they've got it all figured out, including preamps and solid-state amplifiers. Now, if that's what you're into, that's it. I'm telling you, one place to go, M Squared Antennas. Once again, their website is m2inc.com. That's M followed by the numeral 2inc.com, or you can go to our website, qsoradioshow.com. Go to their website, take a look around, and you know what? You can pick up the phone and you can call them and ask them questions about what it is you're trying to do, and they'll tell you what you need and they'll work with you. M Squared Antennas. One of the things we noticed at the Dayton Hamvention 2012 was the number of people that came up to the QSO radio booth and said, "Hey, I got my ticket by studying with Ham Test Online. My wife got her license through studying with Ham Test Online. My son got his ticket. All of my kids got their tickets with Ham Test Online." I mean, it went on and on and on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I've looked at all different kinds of study material for getting your ham ticket. And either there's a rule, they're either cram sessions where you just memorize the answers, or they're so technical that you can get the ticket providing you want to study for the rest of your life. But Ham Test Online is kind of a perfect blend of that. In other words, they teach you. You actually learn the material. They give you pictures, simple descriptions, however. Rather than a book that rambles on and on and on and on about something, it's concise. It's to the point. It's where your mind can grasp it. And then when you see that question come around again on the test, you're ready for it because you've got a brief overview. I mean, you don't know all the technical implications of some mathematical formula, but you have a good idea on the concept, I want to say, of how something works or operates. Therefore, you know how to pick the right answer. Now, if, say, you're studying and you get the wrong answer, it will feed you back that question again and again and again. And finally, you can't help but learn it. You can go up to Ham Test Online and literally spend, hours if you wish, and it doesn't bore you. You don't feel like you're not yawning like reading into a book or listening to a tape recording or something. It's a very unique experience. If you know someone that you'd like to see, get their ticket. Give them a gift certificate. Give them a membership to Hamtest Online. If you want to upgrade and get the next license up, enroll with Hamtest Online. Don't fool around. Don't waste your time. The technician ticket's only around $20 for like 2 years. You can't miss. Go to their website. It's so simple. Hamtestonline.com. That's hamtestonline.com. Here at the QSO Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website, it's simply QSOradioshow.com, and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. And now, ladies and gentlemen, back to our rebroadcast of the Huntsville Ham Fest 2012 broadcast live, right here on QSO.
And I don't know what mic he's on. You want to make sure that the thing's... He's up. I got Joe with me.
And, yep, it sounds good.
The question I have is, where is the cat in the hat hat? Now, where is that at?
Where is the hat? You know, I get asked that a lot here. I only wear that hat at Dayton. It's a Dayton shtick for me.
Oh, really?
Just like Gordon West wears shorts, I wear my hat. And just like Sam, N8VES, wears his tower hat, I wear my cat in the hat at Dayton. It's become a Dayton tradition. Now, the only other ham fest I think I'm ever going to wear that at would be is if I ever get to the one in Friedrichshafen, I think I'm going to wear the hat.
I don't know. I think you should wear the hat at all the ham fest. It's a trademark. I mean, you know, and people can find you in a crowd real quick. You know, they can see you. I mean, I don't know, one time we were somewhere, and you came by to do an interview, and there were some folks here waiting and all that kind of stuff. And then later on, I said, okay, they got up and left. And I said, we've got to find Joe. Well, I didn't take but about 10 seconds. All you had to do is look for the hat.
For the hat.
Well, you're in the into the kit building thing. And I talk all about that. I want to know. You know, you work with CQ Magazine. And just tell us about...
What I do is I write the monthly kit building column for CQ. 3 years ago here at Huntsville, I was asked by the editor of CQ, Richard Moseson, if I would be interested in writing a couple of columns, a couple of articles, and then maybe a column on kit building. Well, I sent him a couple of samples, and he said, okay, that's November and December. Let's keep going. After the first couple of months, they had a problem. There was these little survey cards that were put in the magazine that had your choice of favorite things to read in CQ and your favorite aspects of the hobby, such as sideband, CW, contesting, and so forth. But there was nothing for kit building. And they found out that not only were people writing in kit building, but they were writing it in at the rate of about 30% of the people submitting those survey cards had wrote it in. So they had to stop using the old ones and get them reprinted to add kit building to that. And they've discovered that the column is popular, and we've gotten a lot of readers from it. And I've just ran into a few people here at the Huntsville Ham Fest just a few minutes ago that have told me how much they enjoy my introducing them to all the different kits and getting them encouraged to build kits. Because, as you remember, in the good old days, we had Heath kits.
Yes.
And they're gone. Yeah. And we know that the whole company is gone for good as of a couple weeks ago. But yet there are hundreds, if not thousands, of kits that are made worldwide for amateur radio. It's just a matter of finding them, putting them together, and they come in various types and sizes and detail and so forth. Like if you buy an Elecraft kit, you're going to get a very extremely detailed book. And if it's one of their bigger kits, you're going to get a book with full-color illustrations, a chat room you can get help from, and email support and all that, all the way down to kits that are just a circuit board and a bag of parts and a schematic. So what I try and do is I try and introduce people to all the different varieties of kits and all the different components that are used in them, such as surface mount parts and toroids, how to wind a toroid, how to stuff a circuit board, things like that. So what we do is we try and perpetuate the idea that building your own radios is an important part of amateur radio.
Well, you know, I think it'd be a good idea for you to talk a little bit about, now for folks that are just, I guess they have an interest in kits, but they've never done anything like that. You know, it's a brave new world. They didn't grow up like we did where we had Heathkit, SB-101s and 102s and hot water 101s and all that kind of thing. So where do they start? Where's a good place for someone to start to get into kits?
Well, there are several kits. Actually, you can actually start at your local Radio Shack store. If you've never stuffed a circuit board, they sell a line of Velleman kits. And for about $25 or so, they have one that's an FM broadcast receiver. Now you say, why would I want to build that? I already got an FM radio. But it teaches you how to put parts on a board, solder them, tune something up, and make it work. So that's probably a good place to start. There's places like in the western part of the country, there's Fry's Electronics that also has the Velleman kits. A lot of those are available online. Elenco, E-L-E-N-C-O, Elenco makes a line of beginner's kits, as does Ramsey Electronics. They make some very simple kits that could be put together in a half an hour or so. Lots of simple kits out there, and that's where I'd start. When you want to get into amateur radio kits, there's a wonderful site called QRPKits.com.
I've seen those folks before.
And, in fact, I just recently completed one, and I'm now currently working on their Tuthill 160 kit, which is a 160-meter CW transceiver. Right now, there are not very many kits available for 160 meters, and this is a pioneering kit, and it's been a lot of fun to put together so far.
You know, something I was looking for, and I haven't found it anywhere, and that's been, you know, like an aircraft receiver kit, you know. And the specific one, a long time ago I had one. Of course, the aircraft, they use AM, it's not FM.
Right.
So if you could find a radio that's broadband that'll pick up, you know, a whole bunch of frequencies, then as planes fly over, you can actually hear them when they decide to talk.
Yes.
You know.
Actually, MFJ through their Vectronics line sells one, but it's not quite as broadband as you might think, but you can tune it. It's just a VFO and just dial it back and forth until you get to a channel that's well occupied. And Ramsey Electronics also makes a very simple and easy to use aircraft receiver kit, and Ramsey also has one that is, like you say, it picks up the strongest signal in the area.
Never. Tom handed me this tablet here, and I'm looking at all the text coming in from the folks listening, and I'm hearing WTWW on 9990 in the Cayman Islands. I guess somebody in the Caymans listening. It says here, there's a question here from N5XHI. What is a good start kit for a club?
For a club, there are several kits I'd recommend. It depends on what they want to do. There's a direction finding kit that I really like, and the name escapes me right now, but if you look at the ARL video, the DIY magic of amateur radio, you'll see me using that kit. It comes from a ham with an N8 call sign, and it's just slipping me right now. But the neat part about that kit is it works with any HT. It's easy to put together. You can put it together in less than an hour. And then when you're done, you can walk around and use that to DF. So it teaches you two skills. It teaches you how to build a kit. It's very simple. No coils or anything to wind. Very easy to make. And it's low cost. It's around $25 if you buy them in bulk for a club. And you can also learn how to do DFing or fox hunting. So it teaches a skill in building, and it teaches a skill in fox hunting at the same time. And that's the kit that we used in the DIY Magic of Amateur Radio video that you can view on the ARL's YouTube page, and you can download the video in high definition from ARL.
Well, very, very good. Now, that sounds cool. And what's neat is if you get a group of people who are all building the same kit together at the same time, That really helps. That's really neat.
That's the most fun. I like putting those on. I've put them on in several different places. Like in Branson, I've helped out with those at OzarkCon, which is a QRP convention. I helped out with the 4 Days in May Build-A-Thon, which was at the Dayton Hamvention this last May. And I'll be doing one at PacificCon, which is the ARL National Convention. In October, we're going to be building the QRP kits soda tuner. SOTA stands for Summits on the Air. It's for those guys who like to take QRP radios with them in a backpack and go up on top of a mountain and set up an antenna. This lets you string out a half-wave wire and tune it adequately on 15 through 40 meters.
Had a question here. Somebody was asking, and I don't know how to scroll up and down on this thing now because I'm challenged when it comes to these tablets. You know, tablets are something you fit. You know, the doctor gives you a prescription for. Anyways, the question was about using the Heil microphones. They want to know what model. These are PR40s.
Yeah, this looks like a PR40 here.
Yeah, we use all the Heil mics. Now, what you need to do is if you're listening, you need to let Bob Heil know that you saw all of his microphones in our booth.
Bob is here today, I'm told.
And we could tell some Bob Heil tales, but I don't know if they may get us in trouble here.
I don't want to get on his wrong side.
Anyways, now these mics, we saw the mics demonstrated at one point, and it was really interesting because he had an Electro Voice. I might as well say it, an EV. What is the mic? I can't even think now. We haven't used them in so long. What's the broadcast EV microphone? RE20. The RE20s, yeah. And I had just bought like 3 or 4 RE20s, and we went to one of his seminars, and he was demonstrating the RE20 against a PR40. And honestly, I thought the test was rigged. I really did. I said, there's no way an RE20 is all that bad, you know. And so anyways, my son Matt, engineers for the Ramsey Show, came out to one of the demonstrations in Nashville, and there was a PR40 and a RE20 there, and he went back and forth between the two microphones, and Bob was standing in the corner of the room, and Matt says, did he drop that microphone or something? And Bob had this look of horror on his face, you know. Well, then, you know, later on, when I got the first PR40, and when it came, I plugged it in, and I used it for a minute. I went back to the RE20, and you know what? The RE20 really does sound that bad. You don't have to drop it. You don't have to do anything to it. You pay $600 for those things, and they just, I mean, there's no comparison. So that's all we use. We use the PR40s. I mean, they're head and shoulders, and I use them exclusively for QSO. I use them for radio interviews that I do, and I also use them for at all the broadcast facilities. We try to convert all of them to PR40s. Well, and once you take a PR40 into a disc jockey's studio and plug it in and let him use that thing for, oh, I don't know, a couple of hours, and you go back and say, well, I'm going to switch it back to the other microphone, and they'll hold the chair up, you know, and at you like, you know, as if they were lion tamer. No, you're not going to bother my microphone. Now, I hope that answers the question. There's a bunch of questions here. Somebody's asking, where is all the edible toroids?
Edible toroids?
Edible toroids. I like that. I don't know.
But you know about
what's
toroids?
The call sign on that? That's KE5QKR. Where are all the edible toroids? Okay. Would a PR40 sound good for Skype? PR40 sounds good on anything.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about ham rigs. Now, there's some ham rigs that are fussy, you know, because I know on the on some of the rigs that I have, I use them like.
And it depends on the DSP settings.
Yeah, the ones that Bob has recommended, like for the ICOM and stuff, you know, and the Kenwood with different mics sound different.
With his mics, I follow his recommended DSP settings on my radio, and that's the best way to do it.
Talking kits, this is from VK4, VKG. I don't quite understand this. Maybe this will make sense to you. It says 144 megahertz transmit receive kit. Any idea?
You know, I haven't seen very many of those. Ramsey used to make a 2-meter FM transceiver kit, but I have not seen very many. I have seen some receivers I've seen plenty of receivers for 2 meters. And Ramsey also has Fox Hunt transmitters for 2 meters. I think they do have a 2 meter FM transmitter kit. So you might check RamseyElectronics.com. I think they might still have one. There are not as many VHF FM type kits, but if you're interested in more serious VHF UHF microwave work, there's a company called Down East Microwave, and Down East Microwave has a huge lineup of kits that are some surface mount, some through hole, some strip line type construction, which is, of course, necessary at those higher frequencies to avoid oscillations. And they have a whole line of kits all the way up to the 10 gigahertz band.
I say hello to, this is moving along really quick, but I don't get it real fast. There's got to be a way to scroll down on this, but like I said, I don't know how to do it. Tom's over here. He's going to show me how to operate this thing. Well, he's not doing any better than somebody in the UK said hello. I don't know who you are. I wasn't going to use your call sign, but I was going to recognize the call sign, and it went by too quickly, so I didn't get to it. I think one of the problems when people are trying to build things from scratch, I mean, you see these projects in QST, and I'm nothing against that, okay. At all. Matter of fact, as I've tried to build a whole lot of stuff out of QST, most of the time it never worked. You get all the parts together, and you got this thing. So you have a collection of these things on your desk. You know, you have like, what is that? Well, that was a receiver I tried to build. What's that? Oh, that's a keyer. I tried to build it, and this is up here. One thing that's good about the kits is all the parts are there. And there's nothing more difficult today. Today, it's like impossible. It used to be. We could scavenge old television chassis and pull parts off of those and everything, and you had a stash of parts and QST or CQ.
One of the difficulties when you're dealing with a project like that that's in the magazine is sometimes, unless you use the exact source of the parts that they recommend, and instead, let's say, use a transistor that says it's compatible match with that, well, sometimes it isn't completely. And so sometimes there can be a dramatic difference in performance. So when you buy a kit, it comes with the parts that are designed to work together. And that's the best thing. Now here's one little hint that I do give for people who are building kits. The worst thing that can happen in the middle of a kit is to be missing a simple resistor or capacitor that's a standard value that's used commonly in kits. And your kit is missing it, or you dropped it in the carpet or something. You can't find it. So what I do is I get assortments of standard value resistors and capacitors and diodes and some common transistors and ICs, and I keep those handy. And the reason is that not only do I have standard spare parts, but if modifications come out, like, oh, we decided to change this 10K resistor to 100K resistor, well, you don't want them to send an envelope with a 2-cent resistor in it. That's too much problem. So it's always good if you have a drawer that has your resistors sorted out so that you can substitute. So if your kit is either missing one or you want to change a value that you have found out works better, it's always good to have a set of standardized spare parts. That's the biggest hint I give to my fellow kit builders.
Well, yeah, and compatibility. Let me give you an example. If you build crystal radios or you ever want to build a crystal radio, I don't know what is wrong. These people sell these IN34As or 1N34As on eBay, but they're not germanium diodes. I don't know what they are, but they couldn't detect an elephant coming through. Okay,
yeah.
And then you find a genuine 1N34A that is a germanium diode, and it's hot. Works really good.
Exactly.
You know. So I don't know what that is. I mean, they'll ship them. It says right on the package, 1N34A.
It may have the DC characteristics, but it doesn't have the AC characteristic.
That's probably what it is. I don't know about it. They don't work. I can tell you that. They just don't flat work. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, crystal radios, and when you're looking at kits like QRP kits and things like that, I think that's the only way today you can really capture the same thing that we used to have when you would build a one-tube CW transmitter.
Actually, there's a one-tube CW transmitter on the market now for 40 meters. It's called a Glow Bug.
Really?
And it's a lot of fun to put together. I wrote about that about a year ago. And I can't remember who puts that out, but it's called the Glow Bug. If you Google a Glow Bug kit, you'll find it.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO and a rebroadcast of the Huntsville Ham Fest 2012. We'll be back right after this.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
One of the things we noticed at the Dayton Hamvention 2012 was the number of people that came up to the QSO radio booth and said, "Hey, I got my ticket by studying with Ham Test Online. My wife got her license through studying with Ham Test Online. My son got his ticket. All of my kids got their tickets with Ham Test Online." I mean, it went on and on and on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I've looked at all different kinds of study materials for getting your ham ticket. And either there's a rule, they're either cram sessions where you just memorize the answers, or they're so technical that you can get the ticket providing you want to study for the rest of your life. But Ham Test Online is kind of a perfect blend of that. In other words, they teach you. You actually learn the material. They give you pictures, simple descriptions, however. Rather than a book that rambles on and on and on and on about something, it's concise. It's to the point. It's where your mind can grasp it. And then when you see that question come around again on the test, you're ready for it because you've got a brief overview. I mean, you don't know all the technical implications of some mathematical formula, but you have a good idea on the concept, I want to say, of how something works or operates. Therefore, you know how to pick the right answer. Now, if, say, you're studying and you get the wrong answer, it will feed you back that question again and again and again. And finally, you can't help but learn it. You can go up to Ham Test Online and literally spend hours if you wish, and it doesn't bore you. You don't feel like you're not yawning like reading into a book or listening to a tape recording or something. It's a very unique experience. If you know someone that you'd like to see get their ticket, give them a gift certificate. Give them a membership to Ham Test Online. If you want to upgrade and get the next license up, enroll with Ham Test Online. Don't fool around. Don't waste your time. The technician ticket's only around $20 for like 2 years. You can't miss. Go to their website. It's so simple. HamTestOnline.com. That's HamTestOnline.com.
This reminder from PrayForMe.us. If you have a need in your life and you need someone to pray for you, go to the website PrayForMe.us. That's PrayForMe.us. You can remain anonymous, use a nickname, or just your first name. There's no financial requirements and no personal information needed. It's just people praying for people. If you have a need, go to PrayForMe.us. That's PrayForMe.us.
Here at the QSO Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information, but go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website. It's simply QSORadioshow.com and send us.
That's going to do it for this edition of QSO. I want to thank you for listening, and a special thanks to our special guest, John Amadeo, NN6JA, the producer of the television show, The Last Man Standing. And, of course, upon behalf of all radio amateurs everywhere, we want to thank John for the tremendous job he does promoting the hobby to a large, massive general public who watches that television show. Once again, thank you for listening to QSO. We'll be back next week, same time, same station, 73.